when I think about my children, it's like a kaleidoscope of images, sensations, voices, smells. All the years just blend together. So difficult to distill anything distinctive from the soup that is parenthood. Yes, and life lived in a family. But I'm going to try today. Danielle came into the world in our home in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, with a lovely sigh. No lusty cries. She took her time, about 24 hours, with the help of my dear friend, Carol Jones, a nurse midwife. She was born at 1:40 a.m. on August 24th, 1984. Michael chose the music, Gustav Holst's The Planets. Saturn was playing as she crowned. This was dramatic music with sheets of sound that crescendoed and then slowly softened. A portent? That birth was the best experience of my life. Those first few months, she spent a very dreamy, lengthy time suckling. 45 minutes, no less, each time, every 2 or 3 hours. I contented myself while nursing with the book, The Life and Death of Nian Chen, a story about a Chinese woman who was incarcerated during the Cultural Revolution in China. As someone who had tried to extend my adolescence as long as possible, I was 32 at the time when I had Danielle, 33 actually, I could relate to Ms. Chen's sense of confinement, but mine was of my own choosing, which made all the difference. I adapted my rhythms to hers, sleeping when she slept, waking to eat and do the mundane household tasks. My most vivid dream occurred about a week after her birth. I had her out on my bike in winter, and I parked it, and I forgot about her. And when I came back, she was frozen. I was so relieved when I woke up. Of course, I have some of the same feelings of remorse now. Could I have done anything to have prevented Danielle's death? What did that dream mean? I longed to start reading to her. I went to the library when she was 3 months old, but then I turned back as I realized that I was jumping the gun a little. It's not so much that she liked to talk, but she did it so well. Her interest in animals showed up early. She could imitate the whole barnyard. If you asked her how a snake laughed when she was a year old, she'd say, "S-s-s." By 15 months, she was distinguishing lions from leopards. And she loved to laugh, and I know you could see that in the video. There's so many pictures of her laughing. Mike delighted her with all kinds of physical shenanigans. When she was 4 months old, he found that he could throw socks at her feet when she was sitting in this little chair, and she would just erupt into giggles over and over and over. She understood silly from an early age. Mike introduced her to the Milwaukee Zoo that very first winter at about the age of 4 months. She was hanging precariously out the back of the carrier on a sub-zero day, but somehow they made the rounds of all the outdoor cages. He was never sure how cold she got, actually, that he worried a little bit afterwards when he brought her home that he might have frostbitten her. Mike had worked as a zookeeper, and he wanted to delight and impress her early with the enormity of big creatures, elephants, giraffes, hippopotami. She offered us such a gentle introduction to parenthood. No tantrums, just very likable company. When I brought her to New York City at 23 months of age to see my friends Liz and Eileen, she took trains, planes, and buses without a whisper of complaint. I would simply explain to her what we had to do, and she would just do it. When I found FAO Schwartz toy store in Manhattan, I thought I'd entered Oz, an expensive Oz. So I bought one board game, which is what I could afford at the time, that involved matching light-colored balloons, and we sat waiting for a plane, playing the game. It was so serene. The difference between colors just popped for her. Her very keen visual sensibility was already evident and she wasn't 2 years old. She never ran away from us. All we did was reason with her, and she would adjust her behavior accordingly. Socialization came easily to her, at least in the early years, just with us. Then John came along. She wasn't too keen on him. She had been the belle of the house for almost 4 years, so one couldn't blame her for being a little put out about him. I tried all the usual tricks. Help Mommy like a good sister, go get his diaper, and I spent special time with her reading and playing. She was too savvy for that. She knew the throne had been pulled out from under her. We saw a few signs early in her life that she didn't like to conform to the group just the way everyone else did. At the College of St. Catherine Montessori School, she was supposed to come in and sit on a circular line. She usually hid under a table first, and then when she got to the line, she always sat a few inches off of it. Fran Ouellette taught her dance after preschool once a week, and come recital time, she threw herself on the floor and she refused to budge. I believe she objected to all those parents' well-intentioned appreciation. I honestly think that she knew that she was being patronized and her pride rejected out of hand. Even then, she demanded substantive respect on her terms. At 2 and a half, she'd hang out in diapers and a t-shirt at the next door neighbor's house. She was willing throughout her preschool years to separate from us to find some interesting nearby experience. But she was always careful to stay out of harm's way. She was already developing this strange combination of risk-taking and caution, which served her well during adolescence and her young adult years. She did slip on the stairs at Christmas and break her elbow. And when they casted her and they buzzed it off, she sat very stoically at the age of 2 throughout. She had an aversion to showing her fear to others. A cool little kid right from the start. So we had no idea that things scared her. On the first day of kindergarten, I proudly put her on the big yellow bus bound for St. Paul Open School. She hesitated for a second before climbing up the big stairs. Unfortunately, when she got to school, there was no one there to greet her. And after a while, someone figured out that there was a forlorn 5-year-old standing alone on the curb. Now, most kids would have cried and asked for Mommy, but she didn't. She just was found and eventually brought to her kindergarten room. She scored so well on the entrance test that I sent her in first grade to first grade at Capitol Hill Magnet in St. Paul. It's a public school with an accelerated program. She insisted on wearing 2 different colored socks every day to school. She was already staking her claim to her individuality. Even as early as second grade, she was focused on the importance of having friends. She wrote George Bush Sr. and suggested having a National Friends Day. The local WCCO news station picked it up and interviewed her in her classroom about the idea for the 5 p.m. news. President Bush sent a note back saying Congress would have to adopt a resolution and he would have to sign it, so he suggested starting the process by writing to her state congressman. But follow-through sometimes for Danielle was not her strength. She had great ideas, but once in a while, So that never happened. But the idea was so great, and I think she still lived that in her own personal way with all the wonderful friends that she's had, many of whom are here today. When she was 11 years old, she developed headaches and sleeplessness, and we brought her to see a psychologist, and she saw roadkill in every Rorschach block. We took her out of Capitol Hill and we enrolled her in the St. Paul Open School. There, she found kids like herself, searching for identities just a little off the beaten path. There, she felt free to be who she was. Her Odyssey of the Mind team won 2nd in the state. She was the person on the team who was relied upon in the segment called Spontaneous. And who would be better suited than Danielle to come up with a wildly creative answer to some wacky question? And she was just great, and the team was just wonderful. She brought her love of animals to the Como Zoo Junior Docent Program. Danielle was the one that the program directors told the TV reporter to go to when they did their interviews for the you know, TV station. She was so poised before the camera at age 13 and knowledgeable about whatever slimy creature she was holding. Initially phobic about dogs, she and Mike walked dogs for the Humane Society weekly for a year when she was about 8 years old. She started out 10 feet behind Mike on the walks because she was so fearful about the dogs. But within months, she was marching side by side with the Great Danes. And then she had us to know that we had to have a family dog. She read this huge book on dog breeds and decided on standard poodle for the family because John and I both have allergies. So she was really limited, bought a huge book, but really had to get down to the non-allergic breed. We brought Beauregard home when he was 10 weeks old in 1996. And I remember as we drove home, her breath bated as she held him in her lap, making sure he wouldn't be too scared in this strange automobile, so far from his mother and his litter mates. There were many animals that came and gone through our house over the years, and they were all Danielle's doing. Boris, Natasha, and Bertie are three very well-loved rats. She let them run up and down her sleeve and in and around her neck, which really gave me the willies. And when her friend Becky Alper showed her the litter of guinea pigs, she had to take one, and Bumba Finley joined our house menagerie. Bumba, who lived to the ripe old age of 6, altered forever our sense about when the dandelions come in and where they came in the yard. Hamsters came and went, and a stinky newt that even she thought was untenable was an untenable tenant in our home. And lastly, the snakes. The boa and the corn snakes. When the boa named Crimson developed the snake equivalent of trench mouth, it wasn't Danielle, of course, who gave the antibiotic shots around the snake's spine. She liked to wear the boa around her neck just to freak people out. When St. Thomas's English language program came to interview us about to see whether we were a suitable family to host international students, Danielle came down our grand staircase with the boa wrapped around her neck. She wanted to make sure that the interview knew we weren't just like every other family. At 15, she went to France alone for a month and worked in an archaeological site where she uncovered an ancient path. She did run away once to town and downed a couple of beers and got back before she was missed. She spent the rest of the time in France with her older cousin Nicole, who showed her the sights of Paris, and I know it was a very special, special time for her. She went out on her own and she got her first job at the Science Museum of Minnesota running birthday parties, evidently the best birth control in the world. She never babysat again. She loved to work, especially as a waitress. Her patrons benefited from her fast mind and willingness to give just the right amount of attention. Her friends meant more to her than anything in the world. I know she listened to others' problems, and she counseled them straight from the heart, because she knew it was like to feel the deep pain of rejection, anger at how unfair the world can be, and disappointment at how hard it is to make one's way economically. Danielle engaged the world intensely and absolutely on her own terms. Danielle, wherever you are, we love you. Those in this room today and many more whose lives you've touched with your phenomenal sense of humor, wit, and with your insistence on authenticity. We will miss you more than you could ever know that we would.
It's been a rough week. I've been kind of on a manic bender.